You're listening to News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
A little bit of Jeff Beck to bring us back. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards on News Talk Tonight on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. In this segment, we're going to meet Mark Critch. You know him from 20 years on This Hour Has 22 Minutes. That show is celebrating its 30th anniversary. He's been there for 20 of them. I think it's the longest running comedy, Canadian comedy, on Canadian television. He also has a show called Son of a Critch, based on his own life growing up in Newfoundland and Labrador. And in the show, he plays his own father. It's a really funny, sweet, heartfelt show that is entering season two now. And I had the chance to speak to him. Here's Mark Critch.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So I know when we first talked about season one, you said, listen, if I only ever do this, if I just get this one show on the air, that's all I really need. And now here you are leading into season two. Tell me a little bit about how you're feeling right now.
Well, it's lovely. You know, you don't really get too much of a chance to stop and smell the roses, because it's funny. As a guy who's written two memoirs and a TV show about himself, I don't think of myself as someone who stops and reflects much, you know, but I guess I do. But it's fascinating, because who knew, you know, whether this would go. And we just tried to be as honest and truthful and pure as we could with the story we wanted to tell the first time. And, you know, that really resonated with people, even though it's such a weird, unique little story about a kid in the 80s in St. John's. Lots of folks felt that they could see themselves in it. So, yeah, I'm eternally grateful and surprised, as always, at what people support. And it's just great to have them on your side.
The show is very specific, but it also feels kind of universal, too. Why do you think that is? What are people seeing in this show if they live in British Columbia or in another country? What are they seeing in this show that's very, very niche to Newfoundland and Labrador? What are they seeing in it?
Well, I think that just the human condition, like, it doesn't matter where things happen or what the accent is. When it comes down to it, everyone's had their heart broken. Everybody has felt like the outsider, no matter how. If you're the captain of the hockey team, you still feel like the outsider, you know. And one of the big supporters of the show is actually Mike McCartney, who is Paul McCartney's brother, who's in his 80s in Liverpool in England. And he's a great, you know, photographer and comedian himself. And he loved the show, and he's like, oh, it reminds me of growing up, you know, like in the 40s in Liverpool, I guess. So, which is kind of like the 80s in Newfoundland. I think we're behind the times. But it's a wide group of people. And then I hear from a lot of new Canadians who really respond to the story of the character of Richie. And I think there's something for everybody. But yeah, I think we've all felt like the nerd. And I think we've all had our hearts broken. So those are things that resonate.
When you started season one, you know, obviously a great deal of planning goes in. You figure out that story arc. Now season two, did you have season two in the back of your head somewhere?
Well, I kind of knew some of the stories I wanted to tell. But then as, you know, this thing became, it was clear that, you know, this was successful. We had a good chance at season two. Kind of sat down and we talked out through some ideas. And there are... what I really wanted to do was, young Mark at the end of season one finally feels like he's a part of something. And I think friendships and who you're in love with changes so quickly at that age, you know, and people, you find your own group of people. And there's those group of friends who are so close to you because geographically they were sent to the same school and you're the same age. That's all you have in common. And then eventually you start to find your own people who are more like you. So I just wanted to have him, okay, he's happy, he's wonderful, let's blow up his world. Because, you know, that was, and then that leads into hopefully next year when he starts, as I did when I was like 15, but Benjamin will be 14, of performing in bars and finding another group, getting further away. And each little spot gives him a little bit of who he is and who he's going to become. So yeah, it was all about shaking it up this year.
And at 14, performing in bars, I can't let that go without asking about it. So you're doing stand-up and doing comedy?
Sketch comedy. I was at 15, myself and another guy, Stephen Guy McGraw. we just were in a clowning workshop together. And we're, you know, not the coolest place to be. And we're like, you know, I like this, I like that, I like this, I like that. It was like, we like sketch comedy. We should try and write sketches and we'll do a show. So we went down and rented the Longshoremen's Union Hall, LSPU Hall in St. John's. And at 11 o'clock at night, on a school night, we went down there and put off a sketch comedy show with two other guys we met who were in a drama club at another school. And we're like, okay, great. And we had a book before we had any sketches. You know, we're like, all right, that's good. We got 3 weeks. And then we made costumes and did sketches and came out and did okay, I guess. But it was fascinating. And after that, it was writing and performing your own work, which is still what I want to do now. After renting the Longshoremen's Protective Union Hall, then we did a couple of bar shows right away, like age of 15. And Dad found a poster for one, and it was a fetish night at the bar. I didn't know I was booked. So it was, the poster said, $5 cover, $2 if you get paddled at the door, sparkling Spankorama fetish night, pre-show comedy by, you know, me and my buddy. And Dad had been downtown on Water Street, saw this on a pole, and I came home from school, and he said, sit down. I said, yeah, what's up, Dad? He goes, do you know what a fetish night is? And I was like, it's a chance to perform. Go to your room. And that was it. I wasn't allowed. But yeah.
You might have missed out on quite a night there.
I know. What an awakening. Yeah, so that's good. I still haven't been to one of these days.
How much artistic license do you take? You're one of the writers. You're also writing with Tim McAuliffe, who you've worked with for many years, and he's worked all over the place in Los Angeles and done lots of things. How much artistic license do you take with your own story, and how much does Tim push that?
Tim would, like last year, Tim really wanted Mike to go away to school.
Hmm.
And because it was like, my older brother on the show, and that would, you know, but I also, well, if he goes away to school, which he didn't do, he kind of went to university in town, but then kind of gave it up because he found the radio station there and ended up spending all his time on college radio and then coming back to work with Dad at the station. So I thought, and that was one thing he thought, you know, which I think if you're writing a sitcom is probably the way to go about it, is, you know, oh, this has to happen. But I was like, we can't have them out of the bedroom sharing the room. And we had to get them back in the house pretty quick at the start of this season, which we do. So what I've found is the more we move away from the spine of the story being true, the less interesting it is, or the less, I guess it's the less I put into it. You know, I think I find more emotion and something else to say. So the spine of everything is true. And little bits and pieces there. I mean, like, you know, in real life, the grandmother shared the bedroom and died very young. And Pop is an amalgam of this couple of other people. But really, Dad's cousin, Frank Leonard, who was like a grandfather to me. But that is so much shoe leather to explain. It's like, he's a grandpa. Right. So some things have been changed. And of course, a lot of things happen that happened at different points in my young life. Mm. But we've made them happen in these couple of years. But yeah, the spine of every story is true. And then, you know, there's elements where you go off and you need to give people story arcs and fun, but each one I could tell you what's real or not.
Does it still feel surreal, to be playing your own father, or as you move into season two, it becomes something else? It's a job. It's a great one. And maybe you're more used to it now.
Well, you color it with different things, but it's still very much Dad. Mm-hmm. You know, it is very much my father, that kind of characterization. And there's things, and there's one episode where he wins the Edward R. Murrow Award for Ethics and Journalism, which he won. And he had a big banquet. And it's so funny, I was up there giving the acceptance speech in this episode, you know, I'm like just taking things from Dad's actual speech. And I'm going like, well, this is weird. Now this is like, you know, you're like stepping into the old man's body or something.
Right.
You know,
right.
But yeah, I still look at him as Dad. I forget it sometimes when I'm acting in the scene, and I'll hear myself say, think of something like, oh, something like this happened to me, or something like this happened. And I'm like, this exact thing happened. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what we're doing, you know?
That's Mark Critch from Son of a Critch, and this hour is 22 minutes. When we come back, we talk about working with Malcolm McDowell and much more. Stay with me. Lots more to come.
News Talk Tonight continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause in for Jim Richards. He's off. He'll be back tomorrow, maybe, or maybe not. I don't know. Time will tell. We're in the middle of my conversation with Mark Critch. You know him as one of the stars of This Hour Has 22 Minutes. He's also the star of Son of a Critch, which starts season two this month. Fantastic show, all about growing up in Newfoundland and Labrador in the 1980s. Check it out. It's on CBC and CBC Gem. Let's get right back into the interview with Mark Critch.
Yeah, I never want to do anything else, you know, because I don't go for like laugh per minute or anything, but I kind of feel like I go for mood, tone, almost like you're scoring it or something, you know? And somebody said to me that they love the show because they watch as a family and the end of every episode feels like a hug. And sure. I thought that was a lovely thing to say. But that's what I'm trying to go for is like, all right, at the end of each episode, I'm trying to say like, okay, all that was fine, everything. Well, here's why that memory was important to me, or this came to me, is this is how I feel about this. And you get a little chance to do that and it's okay to be sad or to, there's all these rules with last for minutes and leave them happy and all this. Be melancholy. I think melancholy is a lovely thing, and it's wistfulness, you know, and people will watch with their families and it may lead to a discussion. Not every time, but I think, you know, things don't always work out great. And especially for people like the character of Fox and her family, like things aren't always wonderful. So it's okay to go there, I think. And I think it makes it more interesting.
As you continue on with the show, you mentioned maybe a season three. You obviously have to keep thinking of new storylines for all the characters. And I guess that means dredging into your memories a little deeper. Is there another memoir maybe formulating in there somewhere?
Well, no, I've got two. Mm-hmm. And I think I would have to live a little more. Like, I don't want to have more memoirs than Churchill.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't want to be that guy. But I think this is a way of telling all those stories, right? It's supposed to be adapting the book, but it's not. It's just talking about my life in a different medium, I think, in a different way. And there's no real shortage of memories and stuff. It's interesting. A lot of them will mean kind of, as we move forward, breaking up the wonderful thing we have, I think, in the Richie Fox and Mark friendship and the living at home and all that stuff. Like the thing is, the safe thing is to just keep churning out the same thing, which, you know, I don't want to do. I want to certainly keep a lot of elements of it, but you know, as life happened, you go on, you explore different things. You're going down, he's about to enter into the forest now, you know, like, and he's getting deeper into the forest and then a lot of other things will happen. So, I'll keep talking about myself because as you well know, all performers are narcissists. You have to listen to enough of them. And yes, I will continue, Richard, to talk about myself.
And 22 Minutes is celebrating 30 years on television. It's an incredible milestone. It's up there, I think, like with The Simpsons. And I don't know, there's just a small handful of shows that have lasted that long. You take a little break, I suppose, around Christmas. You're back at it now. And there's certainly no shortage of material for you. Is it interesting for you or more interesting when the news cycle seems to just throw bad news and terrible things happen and just incredible amounts of news at you all the time? Is that better for you or does it make it a little harder because there's so much to choose from?
Well, the worst thing is like we used to be like a weekly roundup and you'd have newspapers and you go through them and you cut out articles and do all this stuff. And now it's just boom, 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 boom. So a lot of times amazing things will happen on a Tuesday and then we'll air the next Tuesday. And what happened Tuesday is no longer usable in the show. So even though there's more stuff, there's actually less stuff for us to make fun of, if that makes sense.
Right? Yeah.
Because it used to be, you know, you'd have everything. And now every joke has been made by the time we get to air, right? So we tape on a Monday night. And so, and it airs on Tuesday, which used to be, woo, so lightning fast. But now that's, you know, so old. So, yeah, you just have to learn to keep rolling with it. My favorite thing is when we have a show and we're all ready to go and something big will happen. Mm. And then we throw all that out and then we go, okay, let's do this. Because that to me is like, it's the only reason to do a show like that, you know, is that rush. So I still enjoy it very much.
You shoot in front of a live studio audience, and does that take you back to the sort of the danger of when you were 14 and 15 years old playing in bars? And I kind of think that same sort of thrill. Do you still get that charge?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing, right? So I'll write a sketch, and I've never performed it in front of anybody. And so I'll go out there, and I'll do it live, or I'll do a monologue in front of a video wall, and I don't know if it's going to work. And it's still humiliating if it doesn't, you know, but normally the audience, and you're listening to the crowd before you go out to see what kind of a mood they're in, if they're boisterous crowd, if they're quiet crowd, how are you going to work it? And then my favorite thing to do now is I'll do, thanks to our friends at COVID, we used to go off and do a lot more road pieces, but now we'll do a lot more satellite interviews, but they're live in front of the audience. So it could be a minister or it could be leader of the opposition or the prime minister or somebody. They're on a screen. And it's live with an audience there. So now it used to be I would tape, do a piece and then tape it and then edit it and then play it in front of the audience. But now they're there to see everything. And so if they get me, if something I do doesn't go well, if whatever, if it goes really well, they're watching along. So that's a great rush. That's a real like, well, you got no net now, do you? So it's kind of dance monkey. So I love that. I love that thrill. I'm most alive when failure is imminent.
The show that I saw tape here in Toronto for the 30th anniversary was so much fun to see it live. And it felt to me like there was more stuff, I think, than probably would go to air. So do you shoot a little extra just in case?
Oh, easily twice, over twice. And then, yeah, you just throw a bunch of stuff up. And sometimes you even know it's not going to work, you know, but yeah, we made the suit. You go out there and you try. But yeah, it's, and then on the regular live show, because we have to travel and all that stuff for the Toronto show, you get like two or three live sketches and other stuff happening as well. So you get a bit more, there and in the live interview, that kind of thing. So it's a mixed bag. And really when it comes down to it, the audience picks, right? How they responded is really what chooses not only what's in, but the order, things like that. So you can't really grumble. I think it's a great thing in the studio. Over the years, there's been talk like, maybe we shouldn't have the studio audience over COVID. We probably shouldn't have the studio audience. It's like, look, no. The only thing keeping us honest is the studio audience, because it's very easy for a performer to go, look, I know you don't think it's funny, but I think this is important.
Right.
And it's like, but they'll let you know. That's the only art form that you can't fake, really, right?
How do the two shows relate to one another? Because they're very different, I would think, in terms of planning and writing and the whole thing. So 22 Minutes and Son of a Critch, they are you working two completely different sides of your brain as you plan and work and write these two very different shows?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, the other one's longer form, but, you know, it really helps with the banter, say writing Pop and Mark back and forth. It's kind of like, if I'm writing a scene between the two of them, it's like a tennis match, but, and that comes from, I think, doing, you know, the sketch stuff and interviews. Yeah. It's very easy to do, not easy, but I mean, it comes easier. It's yeah, completely different muscles, much longer form, more time, more thought puts into it. And with 22 minutes, it's all reflex, right? Like what I find if you spend the things that come quicker, are the funnier things. And if you're really trying to hammer away something and in a sketch and you're trying to make it work, it's just leave it alone because it's not really there. You're forcing something. So yeah, they're completely, completely different things. You know, one is much bigger and broader than the other, et cetera. I love the two halves of them. Both are, I mean, starting next year on the show, like when I was 15 and Ben will start being 14, 15 next year. That's when I started writing sketch comedy, right? So it's always been something that I want to do. And both sides of the brain are, and one side, you know, I'm really interested in politics and all that stuff. And the other side is big old sappy, sad scenes. So, you know, I'm getting everything out. Yeah.
Well, Mark, thanks so much. Pleasure to speak to you. And congratulations on season 2.
Thank you, Richard. You are the best there is in the business. It's always a joy to chat with you.
That was Mark Critch. Check him out on This Hour's 22 Minutes and Son of a Critch, both on CBC and CBC Gem. When we come back, it's the rundown, having a look at the big headlines of the day. Stay with me.